Listen up, Friar faithful. 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable is on the air.
Unbelievable!
It's time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. The 97.3 The Fan crew is here for the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, delivered by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Here we go. Final month of the regular season. Welcome in to our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. It is presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty, and we're joined by what I would say now is the regular gang here of 97.3 The Fan hosts. Matt Scraby on my far left, Stephen Woods, Paul Reindel, Braden Soprenant, and Chris Ello. I am Ben Higgins. We'll be talking about the San Diego Padres for the next 60 minutes. I have a problem, though. We have gotten to that point in the baseball season after the trade deadline, and things have started to settle in. Padres are playing mostly good baseball, obviously not perfect, but there's not much you can do about it at this point. You can tinker with the lineup a little bit. I think we have talked about that ad nauseum for the last couple of weeks. You can't really make any trades or moves at this point. The team is the team at this point, and as fans, we kind of have to now just sit back and see what happens. Woods, you're kind of nodding. We're kind of at that point that there's not a lot more that can be done.
It's the old grin and bear it, man. Grab on, white knuckle, and here we go. It's off for the roller coaster ride that is September with a good team. You know, a team that has aspirations and a team with legitimate potential to go all the way. There's no question about it. I stand behind that. I'd be a moron to say that they will. But I don't think any team can say that right now. And you're right. You really have to just kind of wear it. I've said it many times. They give us the soup. You can either eat the soup or you don't. That's it. I mean, you can't sit and play with the soup. You just have to eat it or you don't. That's it.
And you eat the soup or do you drink the soup?
I eat the soup.
That's drinking, though.
That's true.
Depends if it's the chunky soup you can eat with a fork.
Well, this is a pretty decent clam chowder of a roster with a lot of different pieces of, you know, fish and potatoes and everything that we can talk about. But it's mostly about our feelings at this point. How do you feel about the team right now? So, Matt, I will start with our first question today. Did this series against the Seattle Mariners reveal any concerns you have for the San Diego Padres for the rest of the regular season or the postseason based on what you saw against another playoff, assuming a playoff participant?
I'm concerned about how good the Mariners are because 1 through 5 is one of the most dangerous parts of any lineup in all of baseball. You got guys that can hit the ball out. You got Eugenio Suarez hitting back-to-back, you know, not back-to-back, but in back-to-back games, 3-run home runs. What I'm concerned about a little bit is how when they get ahead early, they don't put more runs on the board. And I know that they have great pitching, so maybe it's like, hey, let's just status quo. Let's get our pitching. We'll win 5-0, no big deal. But I am a little concerned about sometimes going and putting that foot on the throat and trying to end the game early so that there's no possible way they can come back. But then they fought back on Tuesday, and they won the game. So I'm just more concerned about the little things right now that – they need to do to clean up for the playoffs.
Chris, what about you? Anything stand out from this series that, you know, like, put my finger on that one, nip that in the bud?
No, I think I actually saw some things I really liked in this series. I mean, I could point to the fact that they've still only won one series all year against a winning team on the road, which sounds drastic, but then I looked it up. The Dodgers have only won 3 of those. So, you know, you don't beat good teams on the road. That's what makes them good teams. So I didn't lose any confidence. I actually gained a little confidence watching Fernando taking some balls, you know, one over the fence, but hitting a couple up against the fence. I saw a couple of outfielders racing to the warning track. So I'm hoping that is a sign that he's going to start again hitting the ball with some more authority. Other than that, I already know that the Mariners have more power than we do, and, you know, we have to find other ways. But I'm fine.
Woods, what about you? Anything standing out from that series against the Mariners?
I really covet Brian Wu. I tell you that. That's one thing that stands out. I would do almost anything to have a guy like that. I really enjoyed watching him pitch yesterday. I did. And probably the first time I've watched him pitch this season. And they throw those gaudy numbers up there, and you're like, oh, great. That's should be a tough test for the fellas. I mean, what stood out to me is that Manny Machado's got to get it going. You know, he's really, really dying right now. I know he had a couple hits on Tuesday, but none of which looked like the Manny Machado that we know when he's locked in. He's got to get it going, certainly. We're not going to go anywhere without him. I think... worried, not so much. I wasn't upset about losing yesterday's game. And actually, I know people hate when they say this, but I appreciated the battle back yesterday. I did. They grinded some out and they got close and you know had a chance to tie the ball game late and win the ball game. So I'm not too worried.
Braden, how are the feels at the moment for you with the Padres?
Feels good. I don't think anything that happened this week made anything worse. I know losing 2 out of 3 is not great. I know you look at the standings and being, you know, 2 games, essentially 3 games back now of a division is not necessarily the best. But this is the last 3 games against a team that was going to be very good on your schedule. I know there's a couple left at the end of the year with Milwaukee and the New York Mets. But you're about to embark on playing a bunch of teams that aren't very good where you can get right and hopefully get on a little bit of a roll. And this was finishing up a really brutal stretch for the Padres, at least that we all thought going into it. So from that standpoint, I mean, I think it's fine. I mean, you're going to lose series every once in a while. They're not going to win every single series. And like Wood said, I like the way they battled in pretty much all of the games this week in Seattle. They did answer when they would drop to a deficit. Now, I don't like them blowing a couple of leads that they did on Monday and Tuesday. They got to be able to add on, but if that's really the only problem, I mean, I think we're okay moving into the next series.
These are all Mike Schilt approved answers to the first question of the roundtable. Paul, anything else that you'd like to add that Mike Schilt would love to hear about his team right now?
Actually, probably not. Schilt, turn it off. I'm a little surprised that nobody brought up what I was about to bring up because I'm thinking this might be a little critical now. I'm concerned with you, Darvish, and, of course, with Dylan Cease. And I'm concerned with the Jekyll and Hyde every other start inconsistency. Inconsistency drives me, at least as a fan, insane. If you're throwing out Kyle Hart as the fifth guy in your rotation or, you know, a JP Sears, somebody that, like, a 4 or 5 ERA, and you're like, it's our fifth guy. Like, you kind of know what you're expecting going into that. You have no idea what to expect right now with Dylan Cease in particular, and also now Yu Darvish, who will show us a sign, like signs of brilliance. Like, I fully expect you to go 7 strong innings in his next start, and then we'll have the same conversation. Is he back? I don't know. Because then he goes out and then he has another rough start. It's the inconsistency is concerning, especially as you get down the stretch here with regular season games that are going to mean a lot and postseason games that are going to mean even more. How do you account for that? How do you plan for right now 2/5 of your rotation, 2 guys that you need to lean on, and you have no idea which version of that pitcher you're going to get?
I'm not surprised someone brought up starting pitching. I thought that would be certainly one of the areas where you felt like the Padres need to get more for the rest of the regular season, if not the playoffs, where you can lean on your bullpen a little bit more, but they're not getting deep enough efforts from a majority of their starting pitchers. We talked about it on our show. I did some Chris Ello type research, except I did it digitally. Chris would write in very small print
very
on a piece
small
of paper
print.
And would have all these numbers lined up.
I have an abacus.
Even better, because he's microfiche. He's good at this. But I felt very Chris Ello-like when I went this morning, and I went back 21 games to really look at the Padres starting pitching and what has been the issue. And the Padres have played pretty well. They're 13-8 over their last 21. But the starting pitching has really done well. They have not given up that many hits, both starting pitching and bullpen. They've out-hit their opponents 180 to 131. 131 hits in 21 games is only about a little over 6 a game. So you're not giving up much in terms of hits. Here's what's killing the Padres. In those same games, they've been out-homered 29 to 21. That's almost 1 out of every 4.5 hits that the Padres are giving up. They don't give up many, but when they do, they leave the ballpark.
Well, and did your research account for like solo home runs versus with guys on? Because it really feels like we get a lot of the solos and we give up a lot of the 3 runs. Yeah,
there certainly has been more than a fair share of 3-run homers. Padres did have a grand slam the other day that was important in a victory. But I don't know what to do about that. Your pitching has been very, very good. almost the entire game, except when you do give it up, you give it up big. And we saw that with Yu Darvish. Again, pitched that badly, but when he gave it up big on a three-run home run, and it proved to be very costly. And Chris, I hope you appreciate the numbers. I have no idea what to do with those, but yeah, the Padres simply have been victimized by the big swing over and over and over again these last few weeks.
Yeah, and Scraby and Tony and listeners have kind of, you know, poked fun at me because all year I've been keeping track of how few three-run home runs the Padres have. So not only they've been giving them up, Ben, the Padres don't hit many of them. I believe they have 8 three-run home runs this year, and I believe that's the least in baseball. They did get their third Grand Slam. I don't know what you do. I mean, what do you try harder when there's two men on base?
Pitch better, I guess.
I don't know how you account for that. Maybe the fact that they're so low in three-run homers, just the fact they're low in home runs overall. But three-run homers win games and then lose if you give them up. You got to bear down, I guess, a little more in those situations. But it's a great point. I'm glad someone else has kind of noticed it because I've been following it along all year, and Scraby and Tony keep saying, "Well, what does that really mean?"
Right.
I go, "I don't know what it means. I just know it's there,
and I know I don't like it.
I don't know. I don't know if it's the Padres need to hit more or their pitchers need to give up fewer. Neither
both.
Neither is that easy just to do.
And, right.
And Woods, you made the point this morning.
Boy, don't we sound like a bunch of geniuses? Give up less home runs and hit more.
Brilliant.
It's not that hard, guys.
As Woods said, the Padres put together a roster this year. It's not like it's filled with 5'7" weaklings throughout the lineup. They've got big, strong guys who are certainly capable of hitting home runs.
They were supposed to.
Yeah, right? They're just like, not doing it this year.
Yeah, they were supposed to. The Manny Machado with 21 homers. Fernando Tatis Jr. with
18
homers. Jackson Merrill's been injured. We were expecting a power jump from him. He's been injured a lot. And if you didn't add Laureano and O'Hearn, I mean, the numbers look even worse. So it's not that they are incapable. It's just that they haven't. And again, I don't, you know, you don't go into October. Like, any one of those guys can hit the ball out of the ballpark, right? They just haven't. And so does it give you a shred of hope that, you know, they can punish mistakes in the biggest moments? Maybe. We have a lot of mistakes punished against us. We don't punish many mistakes. We hit a single. We hit a double. You know, we bunt them over, give away outs a lot, and, you know, then hope for another single to drive in two runs. When other teams are able to get a cookie, hit it out of the ballpark after a walk and a single, and you're down 3-0. So Manny is capable of more. Fernando is capable of more. A lot of those guys in the lineup are capable of more.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. One other concern that saw during that series, and he still contributed in a big time toward the win on Tuesday, was Freddie Fermin, but his numbers have dropped off precipitously over the last 9 or 10 games or so. I think he's 3 for his last 30. And I wonder, because we saw it with Bob Melvin writing, Austin Nola too hard in the playoffs, and now Mike Schilt has his new catcher, who's certainly an upgrade over what they had before, but been riding him really hard. I think they looked at Freddie Fermin and said, hasn't played that much because he was behind Salvador Perez all year, so he's got some legs under him. Let's use him a lot. But after just like 3 weeks, after the hot start, all of a sudden it looks like it may be taking its toll. Do you think, Braden, they're going to have to be a little more cautious and conservative with their use of Freddie Fermin and put Elias Diaz back into the lineup maybe a couple of times a week as opposed to the once a week he's been playing over the last month?
Yeah, I think so. That's why when, you know, the lineups come out and people freak out that Diaz is in the lineup instead of Fermin, my response is always, well, he's going to have to start eventually because this guy can't catch every single day for the Padres as much as you would like him to. And that's why, I mean, you have two catchers. So, you know, for me, for the rest of the season, it'd be nice to have Diaz catch a little bit more, than he has been, just to keep Fermin fresh. But as long as Fermin feels like he's ready to go and can compete by the time it comes to the playoffs, then I think it'd be okay. But until then, you know, to me, the Padres, like, you're trying to track down the Dodgers for the division, but at the same time, like, you're most likely very high percentage, as you said, what, 99.5% chance of making the postseason? They're going to be in the postseason, and, you know, I'd rather have your guys fresh and ready to go, the ones that are going to be postseason players every day, fresh and ready to go. So I think the Padres should use Diaz a little bit more. It might not be great for offensive production, but look, you saw Diaz play the other day on a Sunday, hit a bomb.
Yep.
So maybe him, you know, having more days off than he was at the beginning of the season makes Diaz slightly better.
That's an interesting point that Braden just brought up, and I hadn't really even thought of it. Matt Scraby, is it potentially more valuable instead of chasing with all your might to try to chase down the Dodgers and win the division and maybe get that first round bye? Hey, let's just treat these last games like normal games. Let's rest guys. Let's try to play well, obviously, and win. But let's be fresh for the playoffs. And if that means we have to play a wild card series, it means we might have to go on the road for a wild card series. We'll do so at peak strength rather than having just finished an absolute sprint of a month where we tried to chase down the Dodgers but maybe ultimately weren't able to secure that bye in the first round. Is there a validity all to approaching this last month in a more laid back fashion? I don't know if that's the word to it, but
yeah, I think there is, because you don't want to see them gas when they get into the playoffs. You don't want to see them grinding for the last month when they get into the playoffs. And I think that this team, they should just focused on them and not worry about the Dodgers, not worry about the wild card, and just play their game. Because when they play their game, they're very good and they win games, and they have a really easy September left here on the schedule. So maybe winning will help take care of some of that resting. But I would like to see some guys get some time off if they can do that down the stretch. I think it's important. And I think that I want to see more Diaz too. I was reading this thing about him earlier this week, and he says that he is now Pivetta Day, my day. I spend all week preparing for that. And I also get time in the cages more now. I get time to do other stuff. So maybe Diaz, this is going to help him a little bit. Like Braden said, he hit a bomb on Sunday. So why not put him in there a couple more times over the last month?
It makes a lot of sense to me, Paulie, but I also know if the Padres ended up tied with the Dodgers at the end of the year and lost the tiebreaker, and Mike Sheldon started Bryce Johnson three times to get, you know, Fernando and Laureano some days off so that they were fresh and they lost, we'd all be going crazy like, oh man, if you had just gone for it, we could be sitting here maybe with a bye in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know, man. I think this is kind of when it starts to ramp up for playoff caliber teams. I don't think you take your foot off the gas even a little bit. And I know that for the most part, if you looked at the 56 years of Padres history, these games in September, for the most part, have been irrelevant. They're not anymore. They're very relevant. And the Padres, you hope, are going to be relevant late August, early September, every year from here on out. It's not always going to be the case. But right now with this squad, these are playoff games. Did anyone think the three in Seattle didn't feel like playoff games? What about the three before that against the Dodgers? That definitely felt like some playoff games. Even these games, with the strength of schedule being what it is, I think it's even more important. You don't have to go balls to the wall, full throttle. Hey, we got a 4-run lead, but here comes Mason Miller. Like, I don't think you change anything. I think you just stick with what has been working. And if it's, you know, a 2-1 ball game against the lowly Rockies, guess what? Here comes the fist or whatever that we're calling the bullpen. Like, you still have to play your game because home field advantage does make a difference. If it doesn't work out and you end up in the wild card, great. You want to be at home. You don't want to go on the road to New York or to Chicago or Philly or anything like that. You know, I think the Brewers they've all but clinched the number one spot. They are far and away better than everybody, but you have to take care of business against these lower level teams. Your wins will accrue. You can't control what the Dodgers do or the Phillies do. You can root against them, but you have to keep the foot on the gas.
It's interesting. Padres are going to play the easiest remaining schedule, Chris, and you do feel like, hey, if you're a good enough team, you should be able to win these games without necessarily, you know, with your foot all the way down on the accelerator all the way through. But you also can't afford to lose those games when you have that opportunity presented, as they do over the next, you know, three series against teams that, you know, have no chance to make the playoffs and are looking at young kids, looking to the future. These are the teams that you have to not just win series, but you got to sweep some of these the rest of the way.
First of all, the Padres have done that this year, and I hope they'll continue to. I believe they're 22 games over 500 against losing teams. That has been one of their secret sauces. Secondly, I really do think you have to get a bye in the first round of the playoffs if you can get it. I'll go back to almost the first thing we talked about today. The Padres have won one series on the road against a winning team. If they finish right now in the five spot, go to Wrigley Field. They will have to win a series that weekend to advance in the playoffs. Not easily done. So if you can get the division or even at least get home field for the wild card, you do it. And I don't think you have to do anything special. Like Paulie said, this isn't basketball. You're not asking guys to play 48 minutes. It's not football. You know, I mean, you're just going up there. Take your at-bats. Play your game. Do what you do. And let the chips fall where they may. But I guess mentally you could say, should you keep your foot on the gas? And I think you should. I mean, get yourself ready for the postseason. That's the best way to do it.
I fully understand. I get the rest. But the reward will be if you not. I don't want to call it a sprint because I don't think you need to change anything one way or the other. But I think if you get that first round bye or at least home field advantage, that's your reward for grinding it out over these last 4 weeks of the season.
It's a mentality too. I mean, you know, you've seen so many teams cruise through August and September and have the division locked up, you know, for many years, and the Braves have done it. The Dodgers have done it a bunch, and you get to October, and it's a whole different ballgame. Listen, if you can't get up for October playoff baseball and you're tired, I don't know what to tell you. You're in the wrong business. I mean, that's what you live for. It's what you grind so hard for. And if you can't get up for those games and you're tired in those games, I don't think I want you here. You know, honestly, it's certainly not an excuse, nor is that bye week of rest, the rest versus rust, never an excuse. Never. It's never an excuse.
Get the bye, and you'll have a couple days to rest.
That was 100%.
No one would be unhappy without
nobody.
Outcome, for sure. It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. And ultimately, once again, we're dipping our toes into the water of how should Mike Shildt be managing this team, which is silly for the six of us to sit and tell a lifelong baseball guy how he should be doing his job. But you know, that's kind of what our job is, to tell him how to do his job, or at least give some opinions.
How to do their jobs.
And we had Eno Saris on this morning, and he made the suggestion that the Padres would be perhaps better served by getting a little chaotic, he said, in the playoffs, and being willing to think outside the box, be unorthodox when it comes to the usage of Dylan Sheets, lineup
Dylan
construction.
Sheets. Who is Dylan Sheets?
Who is Dylan
Sheets?
That again.
Gavin Sheets.
Dylan Cease, and having their lineup construction,
so Gavin pitch
and be willing to Dylan change things hit. Up a little bit. I don't see Mike Shildt as being the kind of guy who appreciates chaos.
So I said
much.
I said it on the show this morning, and I said, man, all right, I love the idea. And in a fun radio conversation, it makes a lot of sense. And for a lot of people, a lot of managers, they're comfortable doing it. I think Dave Roberts is comfortable with a little chaos. I think he is. He certainly proved it last year. I think Kevin Cash and AJ Hinch was watching AJ Hinch manage last year. Knowing he had one starting pitcher in Tarek Skubal was amazing. Now, they didn't get very far, but they got a hell of a lot further than they would have had he gone, I've got a game one starter, a game two starter, and a game three starter. I'm going to let him go five, and then I'm going to go to my bullpen. You were going to be asking maybe the most old school baseball guy there is to say, all right, man, throw it all out the window. We're going to get nuts here. Nestor Cortez is going to start. Dylan Cease, I know, you got me calling. Dylan Cease is going to come in the third, right? Like, are we going to ask Mike Shildt to do that? Are we going to ask him to manage differently? I don't know. What do we say about the NFL?
Is it a good idea?
Like, we always say about the NFL, like, stick to what got you there. Like, don't manage differently in the playoffs than you normally would, but I'm in favor of it because I love chaos. I think it's brilliant, and I think, you know, any edge you can get is a good one.
But if that makes Shildt uncomfortable, is it a good idea?
Correct. Correct.
I'll ask Braden because I think football is the sport in which the regular season feels most like the playoffs because there's so few games. You kind of have to treat every game like a playoff game. Baseball, the playoffs are a completely different entity than the regular season. There's more days off. The games are much more meaningful.
you almost have to have a different strategy in baseball. You're not doing it right if you have the same strategy in the baseball playoffs
of what got
as
you
did
there
in the regular season. In football, yeah. You know, you're playing to win every single game as hard as you can. But in baseball, you're not. But you have to in the postseason. So that doesn't that require a different strategy?
I think so. I think teams that have won the World Series are doing that. I think you see teams that have won the World Series and changed a couple of things. You're seeing teams, as Mike Shildt likes to use the phrase, of going after wins. I mean, that's what they're going to do. And they're going to, you know, starting pitchers be damned on certain nights. It, you got through the order one time. Sounds good. We got a bullpen that's locked down. We're going to go to it. I mean, that's something you would never do in the regular season because you got to play, I don't know, 162 of these things. And you pace yourself in the playoffs. It's all hands on deck. And I think it's all hands on deck for every pitcher. You know, every starter wants the ball every single day. They're like, hey, I know I pitched yesterday, but I can give you another couple batters, you know. You know, all of a sudden, all these guys in the lineup and on the team start giving you even more than you would normally get out of the regular season because they know it's win or go home now. So I think the strategy does change a little bit. And I think Mike Shildt will make some adjustments that create a little bit of chaos. I can see them, you know, and this is why I'm not as concerned about the starting pitching, because a lot of the starters, like Paul said with the Jekyll and Hyde, you know, they get you the first time through the order, they look really good, and then flip to the next guy, right? Because with the extra days off, I think that changes your strategy. I think your strategy changes, and I think the team with the best advantage right now is the team that's got the best bullpen, and right now it's the San Diego Padres. So I think he does manage it a little bit differently in the playoffs, and I think he should. I think that's the key to success in professional baseball.
I'm not saying he's incapable of it by a long stretch. But again, like based on just who he is as a skipper and how he thinks and how he talks, right? Like you don't get the sense ever that he would be super comfortable with telling his starting pitcher that's made 30 starts for him, I'm gonna need you in the third, you know, instead of opening the game like we've done for 150 years.
But who was his mentor? Tony La Russa.
Yep.
Was unafraid to do some things
fearless
outside the box and unorthodox. And I don't think Mike Shildt is at all afraid of making some changes.
No, I don't either.
I think he does believe, at least in the regular season, of having a steady hand on the ship and not being unpredictable and making wild changes that his players aren't expecting. I think if he makes a change, he will telegraph it. He will communicate those changes with his players, and he will do so responsibly and gradually. But I don't think he's afraid, Paulie, of making a change when he thinks that it is absolutely necessary to do so.
Really?
Yeah, I really do.
last year he did.
Right? You didn't convince Paul.
I didn't. But you know, his
Paulie's not
Tony,
sold.
If he truly learned at the foot of Tony La Russa.
Last year they did.
Tony La Russa was a guy who definitely did some things that the normal baseball school would go, what's Tony La Russa doing here?
Look, I would love to see it. I just don't think Shilty's going to do it. Extreme. I think if we got to the playoffs and you had a way to look into the future and know that one of the managers is going to go a little bit unconventional, doing things a little bit crazy, I think a Dodgers fan is more confident in Dave Roberts doing that because they've seen it than a Padres fan would be in Mike Shildt because we haven't really seen that. And it's not his style. Took Dave Roberts, what did he been in four World Series? 1-1? 1-2, I guess, technically? Like, it came with some failures, for sure. Yeah. You think a little too far outside the box, and we saw it backfire, and we all laughed. Then until it didn't backfire, and they won the World Series.
Yeah,
last year.
And now they're laughing.
It worked. Yeah. I just don't have a whole lot of confidence in telling a guy like Mike Shildt, who's very set in his more old-school style, hey, man, I know these are the most important games. Going to need you to switch things up a little bit. I don't think he's going to be comfortable doing that. And I don't know that it's a good idea, necessarily, to put a manager in an uncomfortable situation like that. Now, if they want to start it, I say start it tomorrow. Like, start getting weird, seeing what works and what doesn't. But I don't think that's going to happen either.
In another way, isn't he unconventional in the fact that the Padres lead Major League Baseball by a wide margin in sacrifice bunts?
That's very unconventional.
Squeeze plays and moving runners along. They do some things differently than others. This, to me, sounds like a very disguised way of asking us whether we should move Luis Arraez out of the number two.
Oh, wow.
That's what this sounds like to me. Is that what Eno... I'm sure Eno Saris, because he's already talked about it. But what kinds of things is he talking about? You said Sheets. So what is
he talking about? Starting pitching.
He doesn't want to, I think it's more, and I was going to bring this up.
It's what... The question for all of you here is, what's the best way to use Dylan Cease going forward? Because I think that's going outside the box thinking, Matt Scravey. How do you use Dylan Cease rest of the regular season, but even more importantly, once you get to the playoffs?
They always say, let the game come to them, right? So in the playoffs, maybe you manage with the game coming to you. And I remember the 2014 Giants, when they won the World Series, they had Tim Lincecum come out of the bullpen in the playoffs, and it worked for them. And they also had Madison Bumgarner pitching 3 days in a row, basically, to try to win that World Series. I think you should really consider having Dylan Cease come out of the bullpen, even if it's for an inning. You need one good inning, then let it happen. Because I don't want him to start a playoff game.
But he's going to have to. That's the thing that we need to talk about, is he's absolutely going to have to start a playoff game. You have to ensure that it's at home and not on the road. That has to be... There are no black and white here. He starts at home at Petco Park. No matter the opponent, it can't be on the road. You have to jigger your lineup as such, your rotation as such. It's got to be at Petco, and it's got to be for one time through the order.
Yeah, Morihone has to be warming up in the fourth inning.
Yeah, 100%.
He hasn't earned anything more than that.
You have to have the temerity. After Dylan Cease goes 9 up, 9 down, 10 up, 10 down, 12 up, 12 down to go, you're done. It's all I need you for.
I agree with
you. To be able to answer those questions, even if you lose a 1-0 ball game, you gotta do it. And if Morihone comes in and gives up a solo shot, the next pitch, you have to be able to space the media and go, that's our process. The whole season has led up to this. Don't question my process. It was the right process. We didn't get the right result.
Willing to eat it the way Kevin Cash did when he took out Blake Snell
for years
in the World Series.
And the guy still looks like a genius this morning.
Like I think after all I know about Blake Snell,
it was the right move.
I think it was the right move. It didn't work out.
Raise your hand if you crushed him the next day on the air. I know I did. I crushed him.
And
you idiot.
And Mike Schilt may have to make the same decision about Dylan Cease in the playoffs, Chris. Taking out a pitcher who looks really effective before the ticking time bomb goes off rather than after.
Yeah, he doesn't get to start on the road. I mean, there's no question. He hasn't won a game on the road. I think the fourth inning, the fifth inning, you're keeping a very watchful eye. It is interesting, the Kevin Cash. I'm going back to that for a second because they took out what they thought was the right thing, and a lot of people agree. They took out a guy who would go on to then win another Cy Young. They replaced him with a guy named Nick Anderson, who is the eighth guy on the Colorado Rockies bullpen now. Yeah. That's who they brought in instead of him.
He was really good at the time, though.
I know, but it's just interesting the decisions that get made. And there's no question, Dylan Cease hasn't earned anything beyond that, but I do think he has to start the fourth game. Or as Woodsy said, the second game if it's at home, because you can't pitch him on the road.
You cannot pitch him on the road. You cannot pitch him in a winner take all. Honestly, like you
certainly not 3 days rest.
Not 3 days rest. Again, Braden brought that up. Maybe that was what Braden was talking about. He did. Mike Schilt did go kind of off script with that last year. Raise your hand if you agreed with that move last year.
But he did it to start him at home.
He did,
which didn't work out either.
We also have so many unknowns. Like we don't know if it's going to come down to the last weekend series of the regular season,
and you
have some winnable or games that you need to win for a specific seeding or something. Maybe Dylan Cease has to pitch on that Sunday, and he's not ready to go on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Or maybe Michael King and Yu Darvish pitch on that Saturday and Sunday, and you have no choice but to start Dylan Cease in game one on the road in a wild card series.
Right. You don't know.
The luxuries don't always line up
Randy Vasquez.
I'll go to Nestor Cortez.
The way you want them to in the postseason. We brought it up last week. I think the idea of an opener like Wandy Peralta, especially against a left-handed heavy lineup, and then turning the ball over to Dylan Cease makes a lot of sense in against certain opponents, certainly the Los Angeles Dodgers, the way they did with Randy Vasquez. I would think that it would be perfect to do that with Dylan Cease as well. If you were facing the Dodgers, lefty against Freeman and Otani near the top of the order, bring in Dylan Cease for the second, through maybe the fourth or fifth, after the bottom of the order, the top of the order, and then as far as he can get down in the bottom of the lineup again. And then you don't let him see a second time against that top of the order. That'd be fairly unconventional, but we saw him do it with Randy Vasquez already.
How many of us would see Dylan Cease sitting down 10 in a row and be like, keep him in there?
Oh, I know. That's what we've been talking about. We talked about it
yesterday.
We talked about it yesterday.
His problem is that when it unravels
fast.
So fast.
It does.
By the time you're like,
you can't have a guy up every friggin' inning that he's out there. You can't have two guys double barreled in the pen, the first, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth.
It does feel like retired 13 in a row. He goes 3-2 on a batter. He misses by an inch. Then he gives up a single, and on the next pitch is a three-run homer. It's like
it's 30 seconds.
He's throwing a perfect game 45 seconds ago. Now we're down 3-1.
Yeah,
How did that happen?
You can't have Morgan and Morejon warming up in the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, to knowing he's going to implode at some point. You just can't do it.
Morejon's like, Skip, I've thrown 90 pitches down.
I've started and finished the game for you.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. So the Padres have now finished their season series against every American League playoff contender. And by the way, not done well. The Padres against the American League, they are pretty poor this season. Which team do you guys think is the best of the AL now that we've really seen all the ones that will probably end up in the postseason tournament? Braden, is it the Tigers? Is it the Red Sox? Is it the Mariners that we just saw? Who's the class of the American League now?
I don't know, because like when we saw Toronto, they were good, but they weren't like this good. They looked pretty good. You know, Boston was everybody's pick at the beginning of the year to win the American League. I just think, like, you know, even though the Tigers have kind of scuffled in the second half, they to me are like the team that had the most complete team for the majority of the season. Plus, they got arguably the best starter in Major League Baseball, one of the best starters in Major League Baseball, in Tarek Skubal. So, I don't know. It's just kind of hard based on like the way that they've all played. I mean, I thought Seattle looked pretty good this week, but I'd probably go with Detroit. I mean, at the time, you know, right around the All-Star break, I mean, that guy's like Javi Baez batting ninth, but he was hitting like close to 300 on the season, and they got a lot of guys in their lineup that that can rake. They got good starting pitching. You know, bullpen solid. You know, probably Detroit, I guess, is what comes to mind. But, you know, I think, to me, I just think the National League is so much better than the American League, which makes no sense because the Padres can't beat American League teams. Mm-hmm. You know, I think most of the problems for the Padres are going to be in the National League than the American League. It seems like the American League teams all have at least one massive flaw to them.
Chris, if you're talking Tigers, by the way, it sounds like you're promoting next year's opening series.
That's true. I'll go to you next because you're the only one not feverishly looking up stats on your phone right now.
I'm looking at
standings, and I'm just going.
Toronto's in first, right?
Are the Royals in the playoffs?
They're not out of it, but
yeah. I'm going to be unconventional here because it's really value bullpen depth, and I don't know that the Mariners have enough of it. I think they have two guys they can count on, maybe a third. I think the Yankees, when everybody's right, you know, if they can get Duvall and they got Bednar now, and now they bring, you know, they got the other guy. I think Aaron Boone with a healthy lineup can utilize his bullpen, and wouldn't be shocked if the Yankees could make a run through that American League. I do think it's wide open, though.
All right, we got a Tigers, we got a Yankees. Paulie, who do you think is the class of the AL?
I'll go with the Blue Jays. But I will start by saying I think the World Series winner comes out of the National League this year. I think it's a little bit tighter in the National League. Now, really, the playoff field, if you're going off the you know, like the fan graphs, projections that we're checking every day, the 12 teams have almost been pretty much set in stone now at this point. Like, I think the Mariners were like 89.5% likelihood of making the playoffs, and they were the lowest. So I think I'd probably go with the with the Toronto Blue Jays. I would agree with Chris. I could see the Yankees going on a run. I think the Mariners have all of the right pieces. They've never even been to a World Series, so it's kind of hard for me to be like, yep, this is the year. But I mean, they have that potent lineup that can just hit you so hard in those first five guys with Suarez and Rally and, you know, Julio Rodriguez, and that starting pitching is scary, but it's hard to put some faith into a team that's just proven they've never been able to do it.
This is exciting for me. I could have done a roundtable draft. We've had a different selection every time. What's he? Keep it going, or are you going to repeat?
I'm going Seattle.
All right, we have four different choices now.
You know, I picked at the beginning of the year. I picked Boston.
Maybe signed to see who the other team is going to look
right now. I picked Boston at the beginning of the year, and then it looked like that was one of the dumber picks of all time. And now it looks pretty brilliant again. That wouldn't surprise me. But I came away from this series being massively impressed. And you know, they're so far away, you don't see them a lot. Then you start looking at the numbers of starting pitchers, and you're like, okay, George Kirby, Brian Wu, Luis Castillo, like your bullpen is a little bit suspect in the middle innings, but Matt Brash, Munoz, those guys are nasty as can be, and they're the bottom of their lineup a little bit suspect, but man, they look really good. I hope it's not them, because I don't want to be one of those last teams without a World Series.
That's a good
point. What I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think it would be cool, be a great story for Seattle, but you know, if they get there, I don't want them to win
it. You can always beat them in the World Series as well. Audible now. It is a roundtable draft. Scravy, you either get to choose the Red Sox or the Astros.
I'll go with the Red Sox.
Okay, fine.
I'll go with the Red
here.
Sox for no other reason other than that they were the only ones left.
All right, then I get to take the Astros. I can make an argument about the Houston Astros. They're the team that's done it more often than anyone else in recent years. They're getting healthy with superstars like Yordan Alvarez coming back. They've got the starting pitching, I think, to make a deep run in the playoffs. And if they can't find a way to do it, they'll find a way to cheat their way to another title. So you can always make an argument for the Houston Astros being the class of the American League. All right, it's time for our seventh inning stretch. Take a little break from the baseball talk. And we're going to go into the Wayback Machine today. And I want to ask each of my colleagues, because I don't know all these stories, what was the story of your first ever professional on-air moment on the radio? Matt, where was your first on-air moment?
Oh, man. This is a pretty good one.
He has a moment every day.
Okay. My first on-air moment, I was working across the street, and I was an intern, and I was sent to the grocery store to buy something, and they didn't know I was sent to buy this specific thing, and so it brought me on the air. But I was sent by one of the cast members to the grocery store to buy tampons. And so when we got back, they found out what I bought, and they were like, you are coming on the air right now, and you are going to tell this story about you at 9 o'clock in the morning buying tampons at Vons.
So it wasn't a bit. It was like one of them grabbing you saying, can you do me a huge favor?
Yeah, you know who.
I think I know who it is.
Yeah. It was one of those things like, hey, don't tell anyone, but go down there. And I was like, okay, I'm a good intern. I'm going to go do what you're saying, so I'm going to go down there. But I came back, and they saw it. And first off, they were angry that I was sent for a personal errand.
Right.
But they were also like, all right, there's a bit here.
Yeah, so, good bit.
Yeah, that was my first experience. It was...
tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., Ben buys tampons for the Ben and Woods show. Book it.
Now, Woods, were you ever on the air when you were... You worked at a radio station in Dallas in sales.
I was on the air all the time.
You were on the air.
Yeah,
so what was your first time?
I was the crazy 25-year-old lunatic sales guy that they would bring in. And to tell you how much radio's changed, they did a bit called Free Beer Friday. And a beer sponsor, a food sponsor, and a gentleman's club. Every Friday in the studio, beer would flow. And literally naked women on a pole in the studio going bananas. And I would always make sure that I had the food sponsor or the beer sponsor.
Coming up tomorrow at 7:30 on Van Wolf.
Free Beer Friday! and they would put me on the air. And the host, who ended up bringing me to San Diego, he goes, I don't know how your sales career is going, but you're blowing it. This is where you need to be. And I'm like, well, then you get excited. And you're like, well, give me a shot. And, you know, it eventually came. But that was it. Like the crazy sales guy Woods.
Paulie, what about you?
I really don't remember, like, the very first time my voice went out over the radio.
Probably while you were running the board on one of the shows?
Or, honestly, no. What it was is it had to have been, I just can't pinpoint, like, the exact details. But when I started in radio, I was an intern over at the Mighty 1090, did a summer internship. And then the next year, I got hired as the promotions assistant. So it was a lot of, you know, going down to the racetrack or the beach or something. You're handing out stickers. And then finally, they said, hey, we don't have anybody else, so you're going to set up the swag station, but you also have to set up the broadcast for, you know, Coach Quintero is doing a Saturday show or something. And so you sit there, you got your headphones, you're getting the mic levels, everything good. And, like, I think at one point he was like, you know, hey, Paulie, how you doing? And I'm like, hey, how's it going? You know, something like that. It was just very minimal. Other than that, yeah, I don't remember, like, the first day, but I know it was something like that.
Braden, what about you?
Well, my college radio station at TCU is a blowtorch of an antenna throughout the whole DFW area. So, you know, I would consider that probably my first time on air for radio. I used to do this. We had to sign up for shifts as part of class, and I got the 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. college radio shift.
That's fun, though.
On KTCU.
Did you play music, or was it just
pop? It was a music show, so it was fun. But the thing was, is, like, during the day, Woods, we played the worst music ever.
I can relate.
It was like Americana. I don't know.
That's great stuff. I would have loved that.
No, it was like it was like Texas country and just boring country, like not like some of the stuff
you didn't get to
played.
Pick the music.
Well, that was during the day. And then at night, anytime after 10 o'clock, they said, play whatever you want.
That's a dream.
So me and the other guy that did the shift, and he brought in his buddy, and his buddy was a punter at Ole Miss, and so we'd play, like, alternative rock music and some good stuff. You know, probably a lot of stuff that 94.9 used to play back in the day.
Yeah,
then we'd do bits and stuff like that and had some fun, and we'd stay up till 1 in the morning. And then with that station is, it was not commercial, so, like, everything had to be, like, underwriting stuff. We couldn't play ads, right? We were just playing stuff from Spotify through the air, you know, jumping on whatever we wanted.
Elite.
You know, segments for like 20 minutes.
That's
maybe
elite,
like,
radio
3 minutes.
Right there. That's how it should be.
We'd go hang out in, like, the common area and eat pizza and watch, you know, Thursday night football or whatever it was. And then at the end, they only had a broadcast right for like 6 in the morning to 1 a.m. So I had to turn the signal off every single night, you know, at 1 in the morning. And it was just like we'd sign off. We'd play some Van Halen song the same every time, and then it would just be like dead air for like until 6 a.m. shift. Yeah.
Hilarious.
It's honestly how it should be, man.
It was awesome.
They've taken away a lot of the personalities' freedom to. That's how you get to know a personality, by what they like, what they say, what they play. And they're like, nope, you're going to play this playlist.
College radio at San Diego State, they would do hour blocks, and you would sign up for a block. And, like, literally from, call it 8 to 9 a.m., it didn't matter what time of day or what day of the week. Like, that was your block, and if you didn't show up, it would be dead air for an hour. If you did show up, like, I remember one time there were, like, a couple of girls doing a music show or whatever, and they literally just had an iPod that they just plugged in a wire, and they were just playing songs and talking about it.
There were no
copyright infringements. It was just
YouTube was blocking you.
The guy before me was just some random dude that would, like, every Thursday he had this, like, jazz show.
Yeah,
so, like,
jazz
had, like, jazz show on before us.
That's
and
great,
it was like
man.
We just, like, hang out and wait for him to finish.
That's the best radio.
And
I love jazz radio.
We used to have this
guy, Tim Meadows SNL skit. It's the Quiet Storm.
Overnight
we
radio.
We used to have this guy call in too. He was called Antenna Man. He was, like, the craziest dude ever that would just call in and
what
like,
was his name?
Antenna Man.
Oh, Antenna Man.
He was wild, dude.
That
was some crazy times at college radio.
Braden brings up the going off the air song. Chris remembers this at the old 690 station. They didn't go off the air, but you had to play the Mexican national anthem.
Yeah, I remember listening
at midnight every single night. And my first on air shift actually came even after the Mexican national anthem. It was so late at night. But we used to have local programming on some nights until 1 or even 2 a.m. And someone needed to do sports updates at the top and bottom of every hour. And I remember I think it might have been Craig, had to leave. And no one was there to do the 12:30 a.m. sports update. And I was the I was like the new guy, the producer, and I'm like, can I do it? Can you let me on here? I was so nervous to give the scores of like Orioles 5, Indians 2, in a 2:30, like 12:30 in the morning.
Yeah, but you got a certain amount of time. You got to get that.
I had 3 minutes, which felt like an eternity to be on the sports update. But it was a 3-minute sports update. I got the bed. It was firing. I remember my heart absolutely racing. Dude, with this sports update. Like, I'm Ben Higgins with this sports update. It was terrifying. Now, Chris, you started as a writer. Los Angeles Times. When did you
for Wolfman
switch over
Jack.
To the radio?
I was going to say, I might have been on my college radio station, but radio hadn't been invented yet when I went to college. I'm just going to go. I mean, there's a few different times I started, but I think the first time I really got any traction was doing sports updates late at night that you just talked about on a weekday night when the sports doctor John Chalesnik had a show, and some will remember his name around here.
Yeah, Doc reached out to me last week.
He came and talked to my class at TCU when I was a student there.
I took a sports radio class at Palomar, and he was the teacher.
The sports doctor was doing a show, and it was late at night. Nothing was happening. He said, "Would you like to come in and do a segment with me?" And I said, "Of course." And he brought me in. We did 15 minutes. The phone rang the next day, and it was our program director, Howard Friedman. And he said, "Chris, yeah." I mean, he was calling me. I was like the worst update guy. It was shocking. So I didn't understand why he was even calling. Lesnick patched through on the other line. "John, are you there?" "Yes." "Chris, you there?" "Yes." "All right, guys, listen up. Last night, I understand, John, you brought Chris on without telling anybody about that. If you guys ever do that again, you're both fired."
Wow.
Whoa, damn. Next sentence. "But it was quite good. I think you guys should go together."
That sounds like a program director.
And that's exactly how I got my first little thing.
That's amazing.
And it was the sports doctor, and then somebody called in and gave me the nickname of the specialist. And we started away.
Sports doctor and specialist. That's right. I remember that.
I listened to that show.
There you go.
Absolutely. Nobody is surprised by that. Nobody is surprised.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. All right, let's just look ahead. Padres have their next six between now and our next round table against the Twins. And Orioles seems like a great time to make some hay, but the Dodgers are playing the D-backs and the Pirates. So, I mean, how many do you have to win here? I don't think they're going to pitch Paul Skeens.
I
think they're going to miss him.
Skeens, I mean, maybe Bob Chandler, though.
Do you feel like the Padres have to go 6-0, Matt, to gain any ground on the Dodgers? Like,
no.
Maybe they'll lose one?
No, the Dodgers haven't been invincible. They've lost to some really bad teams this year. They got swept by the Angels. They went into Colorado, split that 4-game series. I don't think you have to go 6-0, but you definitely have to go 4-2.
I thought so,
5-1.
And then they swept the Cincinnati Reds, who, Chris, were the only team that had never been swept all season long.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Yeah, they were the only team in baseball. And, of course, you need them to win a game or two against the Dodgers, they get swept. Yeah. So, I mean, do you feel like it's going to be hard to keep pace now with the Dodgers?
It seems that way. 2 games sounds like a lot more than, like, had the Reds won last night and we were just 1 out.
Yep.
But we're only 1 day away again from being 1 out. So I don't worry about it. I'd like to go 5-1, but I'd mostly like to go 5-1 in these next 6 games, just to go 5-1.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to really worry about what they do. I think it's going to take 94, 95 wins now at the end. And, you know, if the Dodgers go 98, 99, then I'm going to have to probably let them have it.
Sure.
But let's just play good baseball here. And, you know, I thank you, Ben, for making it through the whole show without asking any of us whether to move a rise.
I didn't
down
want to talk about it again,
thank
honestly.
You so much.
I think, Chris,
hey, I'll talk about 11.
I know you will, and I know we'll have to talk about it later.
Chris, kudos to you for not coming in and saying this today on the roundtable, "Well, you wanted Laureano in the two, and you got Laureano in the two." I would have taken bets on the air, and I would have lost my ass.
That's because I opened with it yesterday afternoon when the show
was
over.
I was a little concerned about that.
That's called growth.
I think Chris made a good point, Woods, though. 5-1 is good. 5-1. Even if the Dodgers go 6-0 and you're 3 games out, 5-1 is a good week. That's what you want to try to do this week.
You're not just chasing the Dodgers, though. You're chasing the Cubs, the Phillies.
Yeah. Like,
you just
got to
win your games, and against those teams, 4-2, whether it's September, April, whatever, like 4-2 is the minimum.
Sign up for 4-2 right now.
5-1 though, I think, is a target.
6-0 would be great.
Yeah, but that you can never guarantee. Never. Something's going to usually go wrong over the course of a baseball week. Braden, 5-1, you're good.
5-1 for sure. Yeah. That's what I would think. And the thing with like games back, you got to view it as series. Like the Padres are technically and 3 games back.
As Eno said, get through this week. It really will be the Giants that end up deciding the division.
That's right.
If they can rise up and they're remaining, I think, seven games against the Dodgers.
That's awesome.
Then the Padres can make up some ground if they roll
Real
over.
Rivals.
Come on, Bob.
Then you might not have a chance to catch it. But we will find out, and we will talk about it next Thursday on our next San Diego Roundtable Pizza Roundtable. It really is pizza royalty. For Matt Scraby, Stephen Woods, Paul Reindl, Braden Soprenin, and Chris Ello, I'm Ben Higgins. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday from all of us here at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.